Why don't you ask questions and I'll answer?
Okay, I'll ask questions. This is Grace.
Hey.
This is my wife. She's a wonderful woman.
So they say.
And we're doing this in audio form. I know it's maybe not that helpful if you can't see the plants we're talking about, but I want to talk about, she's now pulling weeds.
Mm-hmm. Right, stubborn weed.
Yeah, so tell us about this. Tell me about this weed, because you were
the stubborn. Oh, the stubborn weed. It's a Canadian thistle. It's not, there's a, you know, thistle and shamrock.
Yeah.
It's sort of the Emerald Isle. They're beautiful plants,
right.
Honestly. But this Canadian thistle is not, it's a little bit different.
It's not beautiful.
It's not very pretty,
yeah.
But it's in the same family.
And it's incredibly tenacious because we
really
have
tenacious.
A whole, we probably have 6 inches of wood chips here.
Yes.
That we're standing on.
Yes.
In a big rectangle in our side yard.
Right.
And it's growing up right through that.
Now it's just, not just 6 inches of wood chips, it's like 4 inches of dirt and sand.
Newspaper,
cardboard, and then another 4 inches of wood chips on top of that. And we've got half a dozen of these Canadian thistle poking their heads up through that.
Were they in the wood chips? Were they
I doubt if they were in the wood chips. Because if we were to dig, I don't want to dig because I don't want to expose too many other weeds.
Right.
But if we were to dig, I guarantee you, you notice, look where they are.
Yeah.
It's right at the edges of where cardboard is.
Oh, they came up around the pieces of cardboard.
Right. So they found
wow.
any kind of warmth and light coming through the cracks in the cardboard and pushed their way through.
So we put down all this cardboard and everything in this big square area and mm-hmm. mulched over the course of 2 summers.
Right.
In order to...
kill weeds.
In order to kill weeds so we could have an area to
planted
walk
that was
on.
Mostly weed-free. And you know, to be fair...
And it is.
It is mostly weed-free. I'm doing very little here.
But that's pretty tenacious.
That's
and you don't want to touch it, so you're using 2 pieces of wood to try and...
It's really spiky. It's got these thorns
yeah.
that will actually pierce your skin.
And the weeds are designed so that the tap roots always break off.
Right.
Like you think you're pulling it out.
And I've got, in some of these I've got like a good, 6 inches of root?
Yeah, so you think you're going to kill it because you're going to get the whole root, but the end is soft.
The end is soft and it snaps
and
off.
And so it's designed to snap off.
And any, so, like, what's that?
That's 6 inches.
Yeah, that's 6 inches
of root. But there's another foot inside the...
And underneath there.
And it's going to come back.
It'll come back. Now, mind you, if you do this throughout the growing season...
Over and over again.
Over and over again.
Maybe you'll kill it eventually.
You'll eventually kill that taproot. It won't have
yeah.
any juice left.
Okay.
But you know, you've got to be as tenacious as it is.
Yeah.
Which is
And they're really tenacious.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have, just to set the scene here, what's your plan with the shape and size of the boxes?
So, actually, that's slightly random. We had all this leftover... Fencing. Fencing lumber.
Okay.
And it's cedar, and it's actually still pretty good. It's got some life left in it.
Not rotten.
Not rotted through. And so we chopped all the main posts down to about 2 feet tall.
Yeah.
And then we took the fence panels and screwed them onto the sides to make big boxes.
So we have 9 raised beds
right.
in this area. Are you planning to put more in?
Yeah. Well, we're going to have a total of 15 in this area.
Okay.
15 of these raised beds. And they look... Like, ooh, super tall raised beds. What's going on there? Some of the neighbors are like, "Those coffins. What's going on?" And the idea is they're raised beds, but they're hugelkultur raised beds. 2/3 of it is actually brush and wood chips and branches from around the yard.
That's cool. I did not really know that because I didn't see you do all the
right all
work.
The fill work. So it's so we filled it up almost to the top with branches and stuff, and then we put compost on top,
mm-hmm.
like maybe 4 to 6 inches of compost on top of that. And you notice they're not full yet. As we'll add compost to it,
mm-hmm.
we'll keep mulching. And you were talking about, oh, that we weren't going to weed, and we don't weed very much. We weed very little. Some of these plants are just coming in, and as they get settled in, and I know what's where and everything's come up that I've planted.
It's clear what's not.
What's not a weed
plant.
And what I'm planting. I'll start mulching heavily with grass clippings I've saved lots of grass clippings.
So, 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
We did this huge project. For us, you know, I mean, huge for what we could accomplish,
mm-hmm.
which was to put in these enormous trenches, these
yeah.
enormous
hugelkultur trenches
beds
mm-hmm.
that are not really raised, but they were slightly raised.
And went 3.5 feet into the ground.
3.5 feet into the ground. And we filled those trenches with logs and brush and then
mm-hmm.
wood chips and everything. Then they were also raised above ground, and they were wrapped up with landscape cloth and sticks and fabric.
Right.
But that didn't hold together at all.
The fabric didn't hold together. And frankly, was not meant to hold together long term.
It wasn't meant to hold together long term, but it didn't even hold together for one season.
Yeah, that one fell apart by the end of the season. That one was together at the beginning of last season, and now it's coming to pieces.
So now these beds are, and one of them actually collapsed. Like the...
Oh, yeah. Well, we didn't...
Someone drove a truck on it.
Right, when they were doing it, some neighbors came to help.
They put in a shed, but in the process, they drove a truck into our yard thinking that that was just dirt they could drive over.
And it was that...
But it was actually like a big sponge, like it was not solid.
So that's even deeper.
And it went down like several feet.
Yeah, it's about 2 feet deeper than the level of the...
So that's... And now it's packed in, and so it's not a good hugel culture. It needs to be resuscitated somehow, like dug out and re...
Well, I think if I go through there with a pitchfork, that'll do...
Loosen it up and then add a lot more fill on top.
Right, because if you notice, but those two are the ones we never finished. Because you see that open space where there's
wood chips? We never wrapped them up.
We never wrapped them up, and that one never even got this last layer of compost.
Right.
That's the wood chips on top of the wood.
Right, but it looks like a pit.
Yeah, it's a pit. And it is a pit, honestly.
Well, so these beds, and then most of these are fallow. Are there things in these beds that you're actively, managing this year?
Yeah, there's some things I'm managing. I'll do you a little walk down.
Yeah, tell me about the beds from 2 years ago. Part of the problem is that we put a lot of effort into these beds in 2012.
Right.
And then...
I was pregnant.
In 2013, you were pregnant and I was unemployed.
Right.
And we had no extra money. We had negative money. We were going into debt and cashing out 401k and savings and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just didn't get any work done on these things.
Nothing real. Actually, Bill and Julie came and helped us put some things in the ground.
Yes.
And that was a lot of meals, actually. The Midlings gave us the plants.
We did get some help.
Right.
We got some help.
They helped us put the stuff in the ground.
Yeah.
That was several things. And if I had managed it better over the winter, it would have been many more meals. But, that's some of that kind of rot.
Tell me what's left in the hugel culture, but in the ground, the low beds or something.
The low hugel culture.
Because this fence is coming down, too. It's off the post.
So. Yeah, this needs to be repaired and back on the post. The Boy Scouts job. So this is actually almost perfect for what we have in mind here.
Okay.
We have...
We're looking at our
very first bed.
Yeah.
And it's really where it's supposed to be.
Actually, a third, as in the order that we built them, right?
I think so. No,
we built that one first.
Really? I think we built this one first, and then you learned from my mistakes and did a better job on that one on the end.
Okay, maybe. I don't remember.
Either way, but it's the one I planted most intensively the first year.
Yep.
And really cultivated. So now I have, these are the third year for these strawberries, and they're back in force. I eat these strawberries every day.
They are... Are they actually wild strawberries or a cultivar?
They are. This is a cultivar, and we have wild strawberries, and they're crossbreeding with each other. Because these wild strawberries are a lot sweeter than when we first moved in here.
Really?
Yes. They've cross-pollinated with these.
Interesting. Okay.
It's fascinating.
The strawberries are okay, but they're great
really
in a smoothie,
seedy.
But they're seedy, and they're really tart.
Really tart.
And so I don't love them.
Yeah, and that's the wild ones. Our not wild ones, the cultivars that we've planted here...
Oh, they're
right.
I was standing on them because they're right out from the bed.
They're
right
growing everywhere.
The grass.
They're very, how shall I say, adaptable.
But they're little
pretty
strawberries. They're pink.
Yeah.
They're not quite ripe yet.
Yeah, this one's a good ripe one.
So you can eat them.
Yeah.
So. Now, what happened to our, what are those gooseberries things?
Oh, here they are. They'll be ready in August.
Are they coming back?
They're coming back. They're everywhere.
What do you call them?
Ground cherries.
Ground cherries, also known as Cape gooseberries,
yep.
They're a type of tomatillo.
And they're everywhere. They're kind of sweet.
Yeah,
they're tasty. I like them.
They are sweet. They're nice in a salad.
Mm-hmm.
But also the kids can come out and just pick them and
just
eat them.
Just pick them and munch them for fun.
Yeah, and that was a neat thing because it basically taught them, since they come in like randomly all year.
Right.
It taught them that. Oh, we can. This is food. Just grows in the ground.
Food just grows in the ground, and I can go pick it up and eat it.
I can go pick it up, and I don't have to wash it or anything. I can just pull it off the thing, and eat it.
And look for dirt. You know, brush that off.
But they won't want them to eat bugs, but if they get a little dirt,
it's not gonna kill them.
No.
And
there's no pesticides or anything.
No, we haven't used any pesticides in this at all. So what I've got that's basically naturalized here are the ground cherries.
Yep.
The strawberries, which are multiplying.
Yep.
I've got some effectively naturalized lettuces. It's a butterleaf and a red leaf lettuce and dill, which everyone knows. It's called dill weed for a reason.
Yeah, it grows like a weed.
It grows like a
now,
weed.
Everyone. Not everyone likes the dill. I love the dill. I love the flavor, right. Not just in pickles. I love it with eggs and anything with sour cream or fat in it. It's delicious.
We've got a few tomato varieties that are basically naturalized here. So these are tomatoes that are growing in on their own. So I didn't plant any of these. And you notice the tomatoes I did start from seed, they look terrible.
But the ones that survived the winter...
And came up from their, you know, basically reseeded themselves, are fantastic. They're big, they're thick, they have deep root systems, and they're self-watering. I haven't watered these.
Right. Well, the whole idea with the hugel culture beds originally...
Is don't weed, don't water.
Was that we wouldn't water.
Right.
Although there's also a lot of grass in here.
Yes, a lot of grass is coming here to these heavy beds that I haven't put a good mulch on this year.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing.
And that's from last year.
And it's from last year, really. Yeah. But the big issue with these beds... is you want to mulch them and mulch them
constantly.
Aggressively, constantly mulching.
Yeah.
And what I had the first couple of years, or at least, what do you call it?
So you don't till, you don't want to do a lot of weeding.
Nope. But you don't want to do a lot of weeding, you don't do any tilling. And what I had the first year was a nice big source of very fine wood chips that I mulched everything with.
Yeah.
So now I'm trying to build up my mulch pile again.
Yeah.
So I can mulch all the time. Just as every time I come out, I just start piling mulch. I've got a decent pile going here. And you notice it's nothing's growing in it much because it's just grass. Just decomposing grass.
Okay, so
yeah.
So that's this bed. Right. I can testify that now is this where you just shook out the lettuce?
Just shook out the lettuce.
Describe that.
So last late October, November, I ripped up the lettuce plants that I had. I planted last May, last Memorial Day, and so in November of last year. Picked them up, shook them out, their seeds all over the bed.
No, they had bolted.
They bolted.
And you deliberately let them bolt rather than pick them or pull them up.
Right, and stay right there. Shook them out all over the bed, and then laid them in the bed. And I put like some some compost over it.
A bit of mulch. Keep them warm a little bit.
Keep them warm a little bit, and also just so they didn't blow away.
Yeah.
And then snowed on, piled on, etc.
And this was a brutal, brutal winter.
Absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
By Memorial Day, these lettuces were up and harvestable.
And so we were eating lettuce from our garden by Memorial Day.
Right.
Which is amazing. Because a lot of people hadn't even planted anything.
Hadn't even planted yet. So, yeah, we were getting our first harvest.
Yeah.
It
wasn't very much. But
it was very small.
But but like, I don't know. To me, there is this qualitative difference in eating any kind of a fruit or vegetable that is like 10 minutes old.
Yes, it is.
Versus anything.
That's documentable. Give me a strawberry. Hold on.
Versus anything you can get, even from the farmer's market. And the stuff from the farmer's market may have been picked that morning.
Right, and it's pretty good.
It's pretty good, but stuff that you just pick and eat, oh my God. I don't want to get all mystical.
But yes, no. And you want to stay on that note, yes.
It sends, that's just a strawberry right out of our garden. And it sends like shivers up and down my spine. Like I think your living cells react to eating this other thing that is still living, and they like, woo, that's cool. More of that.
Oh, good. Look at that again.
We should make a shortcake.
I totally should.
Because it's they're tart, but they're sweet enough that if you. You could add a tiny bit of maple syrup or something and make a shortcake.
Yeah. And this is what I was hoping would happen. These wild berries are crossbreeding with these everbearing. Mm-hmm. I particularly got an everbearing cultivar, so we can pick berries until August, really.
Man, they are delicious. The ones I had eaten before I didn't like very much, so these are riper.
But no, these are right there.
Okay, so that's one bed. It looks if you're not looking at it with like a trained eye, it looks like it's a bunch of weeds.
This is a random bunch of weeds.
But it's not. I mean, there is grass and stuff growing in there, but there's also a lot of food plants in there.
A lot of food plants. And a lot of things that we traditionally think of as weeds are food plants.
Well, yeah, like we have eaten dandelions and stuff.
Right, we've eaten dandelions. These here, these big, big, beautiful seed heads, are 1-year-old leeks. And you want leeks to overwinter and grow up again to produce seed for you.
Okay, so we're growing leeks here.
We got leeks and leek seed.
Okay.
And then we've got some more of the tomatillos that I like them.
the tomatillos that we grew last year, they were really...
Oh, can you shut it? Let me see what's
happening. I'm going to pause it while we figure out what's happening with the screaming infant.
Take him from here.
So Veronica was in charge of the baby and actually like letting him cry because she was hoping that Grace would come and deal with the baby. Yeah. And we've asked her to watch him for a little while.
So we can do this thing.
And she will for a while, but her attention span is really quite short. Right. So in this bed we have wonderful looking leeks.
Leeks, tomatillos, we have garlic.
The tomatillos, I started to say, the tomatillos, 2 years ago, they grew a lot of them, and they spread a lot.
Yeah, they're.
And you liked them, but I just didn't think they were that good. They never sweetened up. They never tartened up. They mostly tasted green, even when they ripened.
Ripened, you know? Bright purple. Yeah.
They were these dark purple tomatillos. I just didn't think they were that tasty. So.
No.
So I would vote the tomatillos off the island in favor of some other variety or something.
Right.
You know.
Oh, well, maybe we can get take up their space with. Ground cherries.
I want Amish paste.
You want Amish paste? Okay. We'll see if we can naturalize some Amish paste.
Yeah.
Then the other thing here that this is new and this is a bit of a thing. You'll notice there's a trend here. We've got this leafy thing here.
Yeah.
These are willow. They will get very tall.
Oh, those are. See again to me, like coming out here, it's like wow, this is completely overgrown with weeds.
Right. So if you look, there's actually a line of these along here. And there, except for where the beds are kind of collapsed and we never finished filling them in,
yeah.
The willows all along there in a line. And their role there is they're going to be like a backdrop along the north edge of this bed. And when we get the wall in,
yeah.
That'll be the north side and things can climb it. We can trim it. You can use willow for all kinds of building projects and all kinds of like canes. Yeah, exactly. It's a very versatile, useful plant.
But this is what's...
But it makes a fence. It makes a living fence.
This is what's so confusing, I think, in part about permaculture,
mm-hmm.
is that it's, you know, talk about working in harmony with nature. In other words, your garden bed isn't this big sterile thing with only one kind of plant in it.
No, it's just, yeah.
But it's, and so this is actually, it actually is already a kind of a food jungle.
Kind of a food jungle, yeah.
And that's the goal, eventually to make the whole yard, like to have 100 kinds of food plants.
But you can just kind of
here.
At any given time there's you something
can,
in season.
You can come out on any given day and fill a basket with things that are edible.
Right.
You know. Well, and they'll be different every day.
The real thing with the willow here is it's a functional living fence.
Yeah.
For privacy, etc. And also just maybe people don't like the way vegetable gardens look that much.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, their issue, but this screens their view.
Right.
And this can be a more tailored garden on the outside of more
more presentable.
Presentable conventional things.
Yeah.
And also, willow is useful in 100 ways. You can build with it. You can grow with it. And also, there's a willow tea you can make that's an excellent fertilizer. Like, it helps root formation.
Well, it's also, that's what aspirin's made of.
Yes.
Willow bark, right?
Willow bark.
So
it's an extremely versatile, useful plant. We've got all along here 100 feet of it.
Wow.
And
those were canes that you mail ordered.
Yeah.
And they just sat in the garage for a year, and I'm like, those are all dead.
No, they're just like, cut into little pieces. Like.
And you just cut them into pieces and stuck them in the ground.
Stuck in the ground, yeah.
And they all came back. But they overwintered in the garage.
Yeah.
Like they were frozen solid.
Yeah. No, these are, it's an amazing plant.
That's really cool. So what else is in this bed?
So I mentioned the garlic, and you'll see
Did you mention the garlic?
I thought I did. But we've got a few... Look at this. Garlic scapes coming for you.
Oh, garlic scape pasta or pesto is the best.
That's it's on the horizon for us.
Oh, that'll be fantastic.
Yeah. And then the thing, this is the weed that everyone pulls out.
Yeah.
Almost no one knows that this is a wonderful tasting vegetable salad green. It's called purslane.
Purslane.
It's everywhere. And I never pick it unless I'm going to eat it.
Okay. I want to taste this right out of the garden here. I want to taste it.
Uh-huh. Oh, let me get a whole floor right here. Rather than just one. There you go.
Well, it tastes okay. It's, you know, it's planty.
That's the thing.
It doesn't taste bitter or anything. It tastes kind of like lettuce.
Yeah, it's a green. It's a lettuce green.
Right.
You put it in salad. And lettuce greens are always better, like, together.
Yeah.
With complementary flavors,
you know,
like
it
spicy.
It has a slightly citrusy
flavor. And that's kind of what I like about it, is the citrusy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, what you're tasting, is vitamin C.
Right.
From the Northeast. So in other words, you don't need your oranges. I mean, that's vitamin C.
And it's, well, isn't it like
commonly weeded?
Aren't, don't some of the ferns give you loads of vitamin C too? Like,
or yes.
Are those, what are they called? The fiddleheads?
Fiddleheads, yes.
And so there,
calcium too. Lots of
and
calcium.
So there are these, like we bring all this stuff in from Florida.
In California.
But there are lots of native plants that are very healthy.
Yes. And the thing with weeding is, and this is why mulching is such a big deal.
Right.
Anywhere that you have bare soil,
mm-hmm.
The way soil repairs itself, the soil wants to exist. It's really important for us, and
yes.
for everything that lives.
Sure.
It sends out anything that will grow there, it sends out to conserve the soil from eroding. So it doesn't just wash away. So you get these volunteers that surge forth.
Yes.
Like plantain, like these little grasses, and these broadleaf grasses with deep roots that spread.
Yes.
They.
And you see that as a good thing.
That's a great thing. Because if I didn't mulch it, that's nature
it's
mulching for me.
Nature mulching itself.
Yes.
As exactly long as you pull up the trees and stuff.
Yes. These things that are tall,
yeah.
I just pull these up. But
yeah.
you notice, these tall things that aren't food
yeah.
are few and far between.
It's true. An awful lot of what looks right. like weeds here are actually food plants.
Are actually food plants. There's another tomato back there, too. Lots of these tomatoes are coming back.
Overwintered.
Their seeds overwintered and came back.
Okay, so this is, now we're down to the third of four mm-hmm. hugel culture beds, if you leave out the one that caved in and never got planted.
Right. And we've got volunteer tomatoes here, and we've got more of the willow, and a big wild strawberry patch.
This, when I say big, this is like
20 feet long.
20 feet long.
Yeah.
And it's, what are the yellow flowers?
Those are, that's wild strawberry.
They grow yellow flowers?
They grow yellow flowers. It's a beautiful plant, honestly.
So there's also some clover in there.
Yep.
And are we eating that?
We are eating the clover, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, turn it off.
I'm going to pause because Veronica's bringing the baby out here.
Yep.
All right, hang on just a minute. Okay, we're back, and Grace is holding the baby because he just was...
Wants his mama.
He wants his mom. And so we were talking about the clover. So we've actually been eating some of the clover and salads
yes,
and stuff like
yes.
that.
Yes, yes. And there's two kinds. There's that one that has the little white flower that most people know in their lawns.
Yes.
That one actually doesn't taste very good.
It's
delicious to ruminants. Ruminants love that. And I'm going to ruminate with the little baby right here.
Okay.
But there's this other one, and I actually need to be close to the ground to show you. You notice it has this folded leaves?
Oh, yeah. You know what?
That tastes great.
That's clover, too. I mean, I've definitely seen that thing around.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the leaves are like little hanging umbrellas.
Yeah. And they're kind of creased.
They have these big creases in it. But I mean, it's the shape of clover, but it doesn't have, it, like it doesn't stick up the same way.
Right. So this little yellow
like
buttercup
dangling.
Flower.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lovely little plant.
And you've been throwing those in smoothies, too?
Through smoothies, salads, they taste lovely.
And it has, again, it's a green that has a lot of nutritional value.
Right.
Is that a willow stick that didn't make it, or?
It might be. It might, no, I don't think it is. All willows are shorter.
Okay.
I think, because actually this section here
yeah.
is actually a tree nursery, and you'll see some tall things that I've not picked, and you'll notice some maple leaves.
Yeah.
Those are actually trees. They're trees that are growing here until they get good and secure.
Yeah.
I have developed larger root systems.
And you're going to move them
out. And I'm going to move them.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's several things that you'll notice. There's one that's actually right in the line of willow.
Yeah.
And I can't remember all their names right now off the top of my head. But a lot of maple and some other... Northeast woody plants, woody trees, deciduous. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Deciduous trees, and this is their little nursery. I think that's one that didn't make it.
Okay.
Because it was really a difficult winter.
Yeah. So some of the things
didn't survive the winter.
Okay. So what else is in this bed? Anything else of note?
That's pretty much it. There's the tree nursery, clover, strawberries, tomatoes.
So it sounds like so really you're treating this kind of like a collaboration, which is, it's an unusual, like, I mean, I've read about it some, and I've listened to podcasts about it and seen presentation, but it's a bit of an unusual approach as far as like traditional gardening goes, because
yes.
it literally is a collaboration. Part of your collaboration is, well, let's see what shows up.
Yeah, who comes? Yeah.
And what survives and what thrives, and let's not like, you know, tear everything else out. Let's try and work in collaboration with the plants that want to be here.
I mean, because the wild strawberry, just happened to be here.
Yeah.
And they were all over our yard, actually.
Yes.
And you couldn't see much of them when we first moved in. And now we've got a whole bed full of this wild strawberry, which makes a lovely jam, I have to say.
It makes a lovely jam, and if you can hybridize it with a sweeter berry, then...
Like, all the better.
Then we'll have a sweeter berry.
Yeah. And
that's really nice.
It is really nice. So. Yeah. And there was the principal fruit in our that smoothie that was, we said was a little unyielding that I made.
Oh, harsh and unyielding. Well, yeah. We've been experimenting with smoothies that have either incredibly little or no sweetening whatsoever.
Yes.
And I'm gonna tell you, like, if you're into smoothies, I think, and into their health benefits, I think that's where you will wind up once you've gotten your system totally accustomed to the nutrition, like you're really getting nutrition out of it.
Right.
And not like, oh, we'll put in some peanut butter and some bananas and some ice cream. And then, yeah, that's
a smoothie.
That's not a smoothie.
That's a dessert.
That's like a milkshake, okay? Yeah. And nothing to say you shouldn't have a milkshake once in a while.
No, have a milkshake. It's good.
But if you're really doing this for health reasons.
Yeah.
Better to train your system to appreciate the flavors of things that are
really high, pack a lot of nutrients.
Really high in nutrients. So, so we were doing things with, like, one of my favorites actually involves arugula.
Oh yeah.
I like the flavor of that. And
yeah,
you would,
it was a spicy. Yeah.
A spicy green, and you would put in a couple dates maybe, and some other stuff. You know.
So anything that was sweet, if you're sweet. The only way you're getting into the smoothie is to pack a lot of nutrition.
Yeah.
So if your strawberries have more nutrition than, say, oranges.
Yeah.
Or grapes.
Right.
And
you've been throwing in some, like, half grapes and stuff like that. Too.
Occasionally, yeah. For the really bitter greens.
We have some. Like organic, we have a few organic grapes we picked up. They're hard to find.
Yeah.
They're only, like, imported for a short time.
Right. But Well, that's when I have, like, a smoothie where I'm putting dandelion greens and clover and things that really have...
Are harsh.
Are really harsh flavors or bitter flavors.
But at the same time that they're bitter, like, you experiment with eating these things every day or so, and actually you start to like them. Like
you look forward to the bitter,
Your system gets used to the fact that when you eat this, you're going to have, like, a blast of nutrition.
Right.
And it kind of, you might even start to crave them.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Which sounds weird, but it's also good.
Yeah.
I would add things like grapes or whatnot when I have really strong bitter flavors that I want to balance.
Yeah.
But a lot of these things, like the clover that's kind of sweet and citrusy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't add much of anything.
Right.
And if I do add something sweet, even when I have these bitter flavors, you've really got to bring some nutrition to the table. To add the sugar.
Well, I think that people have gotten used to the flavors. Their calibration for what is sweet and what isn't is way out of whack because they're so used to eating things that are sweetened with corn syrup and sucrose.
Exactly. No, that's a real problem.
Whereas, like, if you eat what's actually here, you come to understand that there's a whole range of flavors in it. That, like, clover is in fact sweet.
Is in fact. That's why animals gravitate toward it and love
right.
to eat it.
Yeah. And,
it's sweet and tasty.
And, you know, and dandelions are sour, you know.
Sour. Yeah.
And so your range becomes like, oh, the things of these plants that we can grow right here in our yard, there's a whole range of flavors between sweet and sour, and, you know, and that's not the limit of them. But, I mean, there's also the berries.
The berries. There? Which are like a huge punch.
Yeah.
And there's lots of nutrition there too.
Yeah. Ton of vitamin C. And even the gooseberries, they're not gooseberries. I keep forgetting.
Ground cherries.
The ground cherries. Are sweet too. They're definitely sweet.
Yeah,
they're not as sweet as grapes.
As grapes, but they're unquestionably sweet
when
and
they're
tasty.
They're fully ripe.
Yeah. Give me a second to get up.
Okay. So we're continuing on our last bed. I don't remember for sure, but I think this is... You know what? I have pictures that documented...
The order and whatnot.
And I think this may be the first one we completed.
So here we've got clover and plants, the purslane again. And these are also some cosmos, a lovely flower.
Those are cosmos?
Yeah. It grows like a weed.
Yeah, from my perspective, a lot of it just looks like a weed. But this stuff is really... Like exposed soil, like there's a lot of exposed soil in here. How did that come about?
Actually, it was filled in with some weeds, things I actually didn't want to grow. So I'm trying to give more space for the purslane to take over.
you would like the purslane to take over.
Yes.
So, I remember the purslane. I used to, years and years and years ago, mm-hmm. in the previous century.
Yes.
When I was maybe 14, I was hired. One of my first jobs was to do landscaping work for a nice old lady who lived near my home.
Mm-hmm.
And I would bike there every morning, and I would spend like 4 hours digging up garden beds and mulching them and putting in plants and whatnot and mm-hmm. edging them and cleaning them up. And I'm pretty sure that's one of the things that I dug out all the time.
All the time. It's a tenacious weed. People hate them. They're all over the sidewalk.
I think we called it like pigweed or something.
Pigweed,
like,
yeah. They taste great.
Is that the same as pigweed?
I think so. I'm not sure what that. It may be a regional
or a different variety.
Different
or
variety,
something.
And people call it different things in different regions.
But so our neighbors walking by might be like, "Your garden is full of weeds.
Full
what
weeds.
The hell?"
No, I eat those, man. Oh, and these, like, you see these tall spires throughout the grass, and in some places, like, I've obviously cultivated them. It's not here in this bed, like right out there. You see?
Yeah.
That's called plantain.
Yeah.
And it's a weed a lot of people try to get rid of. It is a wonderful weed if you have bee stings, mosquito bites.
You make a poultice.
You put it on. Now, one day that I brought all the swelling down in my eye.
Speaking of, how's your eye doing?
My eye's doing pretty good,
actually.
It's nearly back to normal.
Nearly back to normal.
Yeah.
So Grace had this, her eyes swelled up at one point, and we're not sure what.
What it was. I went to the doctor. The doctor didn't know.
They just said, well, it's not a bacterial infection. It could be a virus. So, you know, just keep an eye on it for, just like, watch it if it gets worse, you know. Mm-hmm. But it didn't really get worse, but it took a long time to improve.
Like a week.
Yeah.
But the most dramatic improvement it made was the day I made a plantain poultice.
And put it on it.
And tied it on.
Kept it on.
Kept it on there all day. Yeah. And that, like,
something
that sort of like the lore.
Or,
actually, I don't think. I feel like I got a tear duct plugged.
And,
what it feels, right.
Yeah, you got some dust or grit in there or something,
right.
And you had a viral infection on top of that. Or, I don't know.
That's what it feels like, a combination like that.
Yeah. But it's healing up. So
it's healing up, and the how shall I say that poultice? The lore is that it draws out toxins. I don't know how much I believe in that.
There's
but
a lot of
it felt, but I know why people say that. It felt like that. It felt like it sucked something out of my eye.
There's a lot of things like that that are described in these traditional terms of these traditional healing. And maybe you don't want to take that too literally,
right.
But if you understand them as metaphors instead, maybe you can start to accept that these things actually do have medicinal properties
and qualities.
Because people talk about, like, I mean, I know I was like waxing mystical over putting this like live strawberry in my mouth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say that the strawberry is filled with life energy, but I will say, you could say instead that it's filled with a lot of nutrients that are so volatile that that they don't last being transported and refrigerated and survive that well.
No.
And it has, like, I mean, if you try to analyze all the chemical compounds in a strawberry, I mean, we know about the macronutrients and we know about, like, hundreds of others, but there are probably 10,000 or 100,000 compounds in that strawberry, you know, and we don't know what
they
all do.
We know nothing. In fact, I don't know if anyone's even talking about epinutrition, these things that work together in each other's presence.
And how
so many different
all these compounds have synergistic effects.
Right.
Too. Okay, tell me about what's in the raised beds.
So the raised beds, this is their first year. So imagine our first year. Remember back to our first year with the hookah culture beds.
Yes.
That's where we are now.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm actually watering them so much.
Because you're trying to get them to soak up all the water.
Right.
So the goal is, I was a little frustrated because it seems to me like we're not following our plan or principles, but it's a step along the way. And the goal is for us to be able to collect our rainwater,
mm-hmm.
and water entirely from rainwater, and also for some of the beds to not need to water them at all, because there will be enough water left over from one fall and winter of
mm-hmm.
snow and rain and
right.
spring. That and the plant's roots will go so deep that
mm-hmm.
we literally will not need to add any water other than whatever falls on them.
Right.
And that would be fantastic. And that's like our holy grail.
That's really our goal. That's the holy grail.
Yeah. But these beds aren't quite that.
It's not there yet. So
And our rainwater catchment is all screwed up.
Screwed up this year. I have to get that back on track.
Well, we need to build a better system entirely.
Yeah.
And
Larger, stronger, better than before.
Well, let's talk about the beds to begin with, and then maybe the...
So these are hookah culture. They've got big woody branches, wood chips, and basically, you know, large compost in the bottom. Uh-huh. Filled it about two-thirds, most of the way full, and then put on several inches of compost on top of that.
And these are about, what, 3 feet high?
Oh, not even that. These may be 2.5 feet.
2.5 feet high.
At the most. The tallest.
And they're wooden bins. They look like they're made out of pallets, and they were actually made out of leftover fencing and some with some fresh wood added.
Yeah. We were just shy, like 12 boards shy of finishing these last three. So I bought some newer
and the
pieces.
The wood is all cedar?
Yes, all cedar.
And so these should last at least a few years.
Yes, and it's all completely untreated wood.
It ought to be possible to replace parts of it before the whole thing crumbles.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, yeah, and that's the idea, that you can, these are screwed together. You can unscrew them, they're steel screws, you can reuse the screws. And I planted a bunch of annuals, a variety of different annuals, throughout these beds to really encourage nitrogen fixing and to create a micro environment in the soil. As it breaks down.
So you're trying to improve the soil.
So I'm trying to improve the soil. And that's what I want to do this first year, just to sort of set a good stage of really healthy soil.
So we're not expecting these to reach anywhere near their maximum productivity the first year.
We're looking at maximum productivity.
Like you said, setting the stage.
Setting the stage.
Okay, tell me what's in this first one.
So this first one here, we've got a sunflower.
Yeah.
And the sunflower is there for this open source zucchini, the Kleine.
Now, did you, I like told you about these open source seeds on Facebook and you jumped on that?
Jumped on it.
Tell me about the open source.
One pack, $3, open source seed. Anyone can use it. Anyone can propagate it, sell it, pass it on.
They're not copyrighted.
It's not copyrighted seed. And it's expressly not copyrighted. The only thing you can't do is you can't patent it. That's all you can't do with this seed, is patent it.
So it's pretty fascinating to me that someone would be trying to apply the principles of open source software to a seed, but I think it's a wonderful idea.
It's really wonderful.
Because if ever there was a case how something should effectively have a viral license, a plant would be
it.
Yeah.
So around the edge we've got radishes. Those burrow deep. I've got some daikon radish and something called red meat. It's red on the inside.
Oh, really?
It's gorgeous, gorgeous radish.
So this is another thing where I see radish as like a garnish that I usually pick off things and don't bother to eat.
Well, we've been having radish leaves, the tender young leaves, in a lot of our salads.
Okay.
All of our salads since we've been harvesting have had tender young radish leaves in them.
Okay.
It tastes kind of great, spicy.
Spiciness.
Yeah. And then the daikon radish is a wonderful pickle. It's great in salads, shredded. It's, you know, it's a garnish.
It's very crunchy.
Very crunchy.
And it's used very heavily in Japanese cooking.
Yes. So great. Great for salads. They're also really good in fruit.
Must have some nutritional value to be such a traditional vegetable.
Well, they do. It's very astringent. Works, does great wonders for your respiratory system.
Okay.
And in the center are a whole bunch of peas. I've got peas in just about every bed here because I'm trying to produce seed that I can put down so we have peas as soon as they're productive in the spring.
What we'd really like are like the early spring pea pods.
Yes. Well, like in April.
Wow.
Like April peas.
So these might not even produce.
They may not produce, especially through the heat of summer. Peas don't like a lot of heat.
Yeah.
But I've grown them right here next to this zucchini, which is going to get huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they ramble all over the place. And I've got those big pipes. I'm going to cover this up so the zucchini and I've got cucumber here can grow over it and shade it. So
oh,
there's any chance that they'll produce seed, it's in those conditions.
Well, it's been an unusually cool
spring.
Summer so far.
Yeah.
Well, it's not summer yet, but spring.
Yeah.
And it was only a week and a bit ago that we still had ice on the Lake Superior.
Exactly.
So we may it may not be a very hot summer. We'll see
what
it looks like in August.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
We'll see how these peas do.
Okay. What else we got?
Next, we've got more peas, more radishes, and all these beds also have nasturtium. Radishes and nasturtium. They flower,
mm-hmm.
and they break up, especially radishes and their roots, break up soil and aerate the soil.
Okay.
And they attract beneficials that do pollination.
So would you consider, I know you're allergic to bee stings,
mm-hmm.
but would you consider at some point actually putting a hive in here?
I really am. If we get a hive, I've got to get an EpiPen.
Yeah, you have to carry it with you.
I've got to have an EpiPen at all times.
Because I don't react to bee stings, at least I never have, and I've been stung many times.
Yeah.
But if we put, like, I'm imagining, if we close off, like, this end of the house,
mm-hmm.
like, get our windows fixed up so there's no chance they're going to try and migrate the hive into the wall or something.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, I think it would be great to like tuck a hive underneath these like trees here, you know.
That, yeah.
Like, and yes, the kids may get stung. Like they come wandering out if they provoke them or touch them.
Bees, they'll get stung.
They may get stung, but
that's a really valuable life lesson.
But I honestly, I think we could.
And even if honeybees are having a terrible time right now.
And it, I think really it's our duty, and it may in fact, we may find that, that we really need them.
We
that
need
that
them.
There's no choice. That there, we don't have enough wild bees coming in to pollinate anything.
Right. And I, what I really. At a minimum, want to get established is a mason hive. They don't produce honey, but they are incredible pollinators, and they aren't susceptible to a lot of the diseases that honeybees are.
So they're not honeybees.
They're not honeybees, but they are. They're actually better pollinators than honeybees are.
So we
really
should consider that. We also, if we ever can pick a plant for a border, I'd say, let's put down like a whole border of bee balm.
Bee balm, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful bee balm.
Yeah.
The big difference between mason and honeybees for someone like me who's allergic to bees is I don't have to handle the hive pretty much ever.
Okay.
Like with honeybees.
Oh, to take the.
You gotta take the honey.
Because if we'd put in a honeybee hive, we'd probably want to have a beekeeper come in and manage them once in a while.
Yeah.
We'd pay someone to do it.
So here I've got to cut my started tomatoes. We're getting there. It's pretty pathetic. Here in this bed, this tomato bed, are my volunteer tomatoes. And they are.
Oh, you transplanted them.
Yeah, yeah.
Where were they?
They were scattered around the yard.
Wow. So they just landed in the grass.
Landed in the grass.
So the volunteers were saying basically these are the ones that are clearly hardy in this zone.
In this zone, yeah. No, and some of them, the biggest one's about a foot tall.
Yeah.
They're generally about, five to 6 inches.
And they just came back, so they actually are really well underway already for this growing season.
Yeah, they're really well established.
Because they started well before you would normally plant tomatoes for fear of frost, but obviously the frost didn't kill them.
Didn't kill them, they kept coming. Now these, and I should also point out, I've got some rectangular beds, and then you've got square beds. The square beds, I'm doing this sort of like soil amendment with different types of plants that I'm growing.
Okay.
Ultimately, it will be the home of a woody perennial, like, say, a hazelnut. And I'll have a crowd of different annuals that go around that hazelnut.
I gotta get your hat. Hang on.
Thank you.
You're still holding the baby, I should point out.
Yes.
Does your arm go numb? Because mine sure does.
Not anymore.
You've gotten... become Wonder Woman.
I got really strong shoulders.
Yeah.
So these square beds will be home to... a variety of different woody.
I'm really excited
perennials.
About the idea that we would grow hazelnuts in our
yes.
own yard because I learned a factoid. We eat a lot of nuts in our diet, quite a few. Like I eat nuts as a snack, a small amount every day. And I learned a really troubling factoid, and I'm not even sure it's true, but even if it's not quite true, it's still really troubling.
Yeah.
Which is that, you know, well, we know that all these almonds are grown in California, and in fact, almonds are so profitable that they're taking out a lot of lower water vegetable beds and turning these orchards and turning them into almond orchards.
Yeah.
And
kind of a crime.
And the factoid is that growing one almond requires a gallon of water per almond. And if you consider that California is like their snowpack didn't come in, they're in a state of severe drought, the whole state, and that in some places where they have tapped the aquifers to water these places, like the level of the ground is 20, 30 feet lower than normal than it was 20 years ago, because basically they have shipped all their water in trucks to every grocery store in the country.
Yes.
And that's California's water.
Yes.
And it's not rainwater.
Not rainwater. It was awkward. It was fossil water.
It was fossil water or runoff. And the runoff's fine. You know, like, if you really could make it sustainable and water with runoff, that's fine. But we've changed the climate. There's no runoff.
There's no runoff anymore.
Okay.
So yes, these square beds are home for perennials.
And we need to grow our own nuts.
We need to grow
our
own nuts. Yeah, yeah. And hazelnuts are wonderfully prolific.
And you can do amazing things with hazelnut. Like once I roasted hazelnuts and ground them in a coffee grinder and made a cake out of them.
Yes.
And it was one of the best cakes I've ever had. It was
absolutely,
it was lovely, fluffy and delicious with no flour. It was made entirely out of hazelnuts.
Like, yeah.
That I would like to do that again, and if I could do it with things that we grew in our own yard, I would just be like, oh my god.
Oh my god, did you see us? Yeah. So, and the long beds will always be annuals. These long, narrow ones, always annuals, probably zucchini and things.
And we're putting like six more in, right?
Yeah, another six. We just ran out of wood.
Okay. Well, we're doing things as our budget allows.
Right. And reusing as much as we, because this is all like basically salvage wood.
Salvage wood.
Yeah, which I know was like this huge pain in the ace, right?
To save all that
stuff? Save all this wood piled in the garage for years.
Yeah.
And finally this spring we were able to build all these beds out of them.
And do something with
right.
it. Okay, this bed.
This bed, and I made a mistake here. Sunflowers and potatoes don't like each other.
Oh,
they
really?
Shouldn't be growing here next to each other.
Oops.
So I made a little mistake. But I tried to ameliorate that by surrounding the sunflowers with peas,
mm-hmm.
which the potatoes like, and the sunflowers like. So hopefully they won't kill each other.
They can act as an intermediary.
An intermediary, yes.
Like, it's like seating people at the garden party. You know, you put the people that like each other on opposite sides of someone, you know. Like,
exactly, the disagreeable guy.
That's
exactly.
funny.
And okay. so all these little poking throughs, those are all peas. We've got more radishes here, and there's a bunch of kale here in the middle.
Yeah.
There's a big kale party here in the middle. And all that stuff that you saw, Pippin washing out, those
yeah.
are actually little grasses that like to poke up.
Okay,
and they're
so
very,
he wasn't.
Yeah, they're very.
I was upset because Pippin was watering and he had the head for the hose right down on the soil, and I thought he was like washing all the dirt out of the roots. And
well, no, and the one that he was watering the most is the potato that needs the most water.
Okay.
So we've got like basically six potato plants in here. Some marigolds for again for pollination, some nasturtium.
But you can't see the potatoes.
Can't see the potatoes yet. They're 2 feet down. They're down.
2 feet down.
They're down in the woody stuff.
So what we had a bunch of potatoes buried in our front lawn too.
Yeah, I only got one that survived.
And they didn't make it. They were basically in a heap.
Yeah. Yeah,
didn't, like a heap of soil. But but this winter was, you know, it was cold enough to freeze our pipes through the masonry walls.
Yeah. So
and
it
so
was
you can imagine that it might have killed the. And it also killed, I think, the emerald ash borers.
I think that's the word.
It's a mixed blessing.
It's a mixed blessing.
All right.
Anyways, but yeah. So that's the potato patch. And then here we've got more. This is like the
this is crazy. This bed is going nuts.
Going nuts. Yeah, we've been eating out of this a lot.
Okay.
We've got in the middle some bunch of onions, and every time I thin them a little bit, which may look like weeding, but what I'm doing is pulling out ones that are too close together and eating them.
And then, eating them?
Yes. And then in the fall, we'll have nice. The bunch of onions.
The surviving ones will be larger.
Will be larger onions.
Okay.
And we've got.
And there's some lettuce.
We've got lots of Swiss chard.
Chard.
Lettuces. And a little bit of clover.
Mm-hmm.
Not as many radishes in this bed. But these back here are zucchini and sunflower.
Is this the same zucchini?
Same zucchini.
Okay.
That's a different zucchini over there.
It's not. But, well, look, the leaves look different.
They look different. They are different. They're different varieties.
And the flowers are marigolds?
Flowers are marigolds. And the idea with the sunflowers is that the zucchini will climb the sunflowers. I'm going to put up stronger supports because sunflowers don't really go into their own until September.
But you want to test this idea?
Test this idea out and see if zucchini will climb sunflowers.
Interesting.
And
not kill it.
Not kill it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I love this idea. The thing is, when you look at this from the street, compared to conventional gardening techniques, it doesn't look like we've cultivated that much area.
Or done much of anything.
Or done that much. Like, it looks like, oh, you had some garden beds, but they're all full of weeds. And then you have these boxes, but you're growing flowers in them.
What's that about?
But actually, we've already been eating out of these boxes.
Right. And this is, and we're what, less than a month, a little over a month into the growing season? No, we're less than a month into my growing season.
Well, the last freeze day would be like Memorial Day weekend.
Right. So, there we are.
The chard looks beautiful.
The chard's really gorgeous. And today, you said I thought you weren't going to do any weeding. And I wasn't really weeding. I was
thinning
and just moving the thinnings to fill in and make like a big...
Right. Well, you know, I was being sarcastic.
Right.
You can, I mean, if you need to weed, you weed.
Oh, you weed. Yeah, you totally do it. I wasn't doing that much weeding.
Right.
So even here, it's not that much. And I do a bit here and there. But largely, once the plants really start to come in, they shade the weeds. And any mulch I put in just is, you know, crowds them out.
So I'm really looking for, we've already gotten numerous salads out of these beds that look like they're just weeds.
Right.
And material for many smoothies.
Yeah.
Already.
Right.
And it's not even like, most people don't even consider the growing season to be underway yet. They're still growing stuff in cups indoors.
Yeah. Or just, you know, trying to get things into the ground. Here are the carrots. I just did the same thing with the carrots.
So we have another bed that's what is this? This is sunflower.
This is sunflower?
Okay, I've got to learn to recognize what everything is.
And these are zucchini.
But not the open source. This is a closed source
zucchini.
It's an apple zucchini.
Look
what's
hiding.
It's an eye-kini.
Underneath there.
What are they?
Lettuce. All kinds of lettuce greens.
There's a little lettuce.
Yeah, I started from seed. So that's where we would be at if we were starting from seed.
Okay.
Rather than this sort of
so
like...
So underneath, so you're nesting in literally to give things different levels of shade.
Right.
And the sun-loving things on top. And
over top.
This is kind of the principle. I mean, we're going to read this book together. We're going to read the One Star Revolution.
Yeah, sounds great.
Because it's a lot of the philosophy that went into... permaculture.
Mm-hmm.
And just to get a better handle on it, because I mean, to someone who grew up like, you know, gardens were work.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a thing that was orderly, and they were monocultures in a row or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And you stuck a little tag next to them to indicate what they were, and then so, you know, because you couldn't obviously tell by looking at them.
What is that? Yeah, no,
right.
you have to look and figure this out or learn. Taking the boat out. Must be Michigan.
But it looks so unlike you would expect a traditional garden bed to look that it actually looks like it's neglected.
Right. No, it's on purpose like this.
It's supposed to look like this.
Right.
And this is this whole thing of putting plants to work with each other and the way they want to grow and prefer to grow.
With things they like growing with.
Okay.
So I've got tomatillo and tomato interplanted with carrots and lettuces here.
Okay.
So they're going to shade the lettuces. And the carrots just have an affinity for tomatoes and tomatillos.
Okay.
And I did a thinning here.
Are they the same tomatillos?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, maybe they'll taste better this year or something, but they just...
Probably not. Sorry.
But you like them?
I like them. I especially like them with eggs. Yeah.
Well, they are good with eggs because they're like kind of a new, like a bland flavor.
Like a bland neutral flavor that really kind of punches up the flavor of like an egg salad.
Yeah.
So I like them egg salad a lot.
Okay.
And then I've got over here, these are beets. They're going to be beets. I'm plucking the greens. But I'm also thinning them so they form nice big beets.
Oh, so 2 years ago, mm-hmm. we opened up some of our beds and our neighbors came. A couple of our neighbors came and planted in our hugelkultur beds.
Mm-hmm.
And they got, for example, a huge quantity of these storage squash. What are they were called?
Oh, those butternut squash.
Butternut squash.
Like 50.
Like 50 of them. And they were gorgeous. And she did like nothing to them.
No.
But
put them in the
at the end of the growing season, they looked like you had gone to a grocery store and paid a couple bucks each for these gorgeous squash.
Yeah, no.
They were amazing.
That
was year one. I was kind of bummed that we didn't eat some of those.
Yeah, no.
But I would love to grow those.
We should grow those again. I haven't this year.
That's okay.
Grown
but
a lot.
Sometime let's grow those again.
Yeah, and what was the other thing? Beets.
Beets, yeah.
We got,
I wanted to mention that.
One of our neighbors grew beets, and
was
we got
Debbie
all the greens.
Debbie grew the beets?
It was Debbie that grew the cucumbers that year.
Cucumbers.
We got cucumbers like nobody's business.
She gave us some.
And
but the beets were gorgeous.
Yeah.
And they just exploded out of the ground like giant
and
pimples
Jan,
or something.
No, it was Jan that grew the beets, and she gave us all the, she doesn't like the greens. She gave us all the beet greens.
Oh, so we had beet greens.
Stir fry
and stuff.
Yeah. And we had, a meal a week from those beet greens.
Very healthy.
And then she took the beets and baby. Then at the end of the season, she gave me a jar of pickled beets.
Pickled beets.
Yeah, and she had, I think, another four or five jars herself.
Yeah.
From this little 4x10 square.
But a lot of, it was packed with beets. So.
Packed with beets. And she had a few other things she was growing.
Yeah.
But it was, the beets were the standout.
But so this is kind of the thing, is we really want to get our neighbors involved in this project.
Right.
And maybe they were kind of put off by the fact that we didn't.
We're so weird.
That we didn't get anything really, we didn't get very much done last year.
Yeah. No, we did. Not last year, was kind of a bummer.
I
do know that some of our neighbors, particularly Ruth, who grew the butternut, she begged off this year because last year she didn't do as much as she wanted to. She was traveling a lot to see relatives and things.
Right.
And she knows she's going to be traveling a lot this year. And she's, this is the year, like a lot of, what do you call it, graduations, first communions, et cetera.
Yeah.
Like there's a wave.
Right.
In her family. She expects to not be so busy going forward.
That's fine.
Especially once we get going year-round. She's very excited about that opportunity.
I don't know how you learn to do what you know how to do already, but, I mean, there are also a lot of people who know...
More than I do.
More than you do, and I'd like to get them in to, come and... talk to us and consult with us. And I'm really excited about this idea of growing greens in November.
Yeah.
Under a hoop house.
It's very exciting. That's actually one of the books I got yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. So how big is our lot here?
Of this lot?
Yeah.
It's a typical city lot. It's like 120 feet or so, 110 feet
yeah.
deep, and then maybe 65 feet wide.
So the thing is, our house is huge, and our house occupies a lot, and this lot is actually big enough for another small house to
yes.
be on. And yeah. in fact, it's the city has it
listed as a separate lot.
So we pay property taxes on our house lot and a small amount on this
vacant lot,
right. Unimproved. You know, except we're improving it.
But, yeah.
But unimproved as far as the property tax
right.
goes. But so, and it's, how does the feet compare? Is it like a quarter acre?
Our entire, both of them together,
uh-huh.
all together, is a little over a third of an acre, just over a third of an acre.
Okay, so this is a quarter, roughly, the side here is roughly
the side is just slightly under a quarter acre.
Under a quarter acre. So the idea is that if you really use permaculture practices and make these plants work together and don't ruin your soil, you know, mm-hmm. don't till and don't weed and don't plant monocultures
right.
and do things like the way that they work together well,
mm-hmm.
you can generate an enormous amount of food.
Yeah. And I honestly, with the little bit of work I'm putting in, I am getting a lot of food for very little work.
We're already getting a lot of food.
Right.
And we should... So my only thing is, you know, I have to figure out how to keep us here and to keep us fed and to keep the mortgage paid.
Right.
But we are already supplementing our diet in marvelous ways and reducing our costs for feeding our kids. Basically the healthiest food we have possibly...
Can possibly find anywhere. Mm-hmm.
And that's really terrific. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if we'll be able to raise chickens. That was kind of a hope for a while.
Yeah, I really want to raise chickens. It's still legal in the city. It is still legal. And all the talk has been that for anybody who has chickens, or any, because actually in Saginaw,
yeah.
anything that you can legally raise in the state,
yeah.
except for pigs and yeah. roosters, you can do.
Okay.
It's a lot.
But the thing that happened is the state
mm-hmm.
rammed through a law. I say that in the nicest possible way.
That eviscerates Michigan's right to farm law.
What it does, the actual text of the law says that your local municipality can override the right to farm, which is state law.
Right.
And this means that if your neighbors get uppity and decide you can't have a chicken, or even your vegetable garden is unsightly,
yeah,
they can get you in trouble. And we don't have an HOA.
We don't have an HOA.
Thank God.
No kidding. But we don't have an HOA. And the city ordinances, as they stand in Saginaw,
yeah.
Permit chickens, permit any kind of small livestock.
Small livestock,
and
roosters.
No roosters.
Because they're really annoying.
They're really annoying. And pigs are extraordinarily destructive.
Right.
But all these other farm animals, if you have legal space to keep them, you're allowed to keep them in the city.
So we could raise some pygmy goats or something.
Absolutely. We absolutely yeah. could.
I don't know if we're ready for that.
We're not ready for that. We're barely ready for chickens or rabbits.
Yeah.
But the larger issue is that if the city of Saginaw decides, well, we don't like that, that's kind of not the image we want,
right.
they can just change that law out from under you. And traditionally, what people have done all over the state is in the city when they decide to change the law out from under you,
they use
the Right to Farm Act. They say, no, I'm selling this produce.
Right.
And I have a right to farm.
And they use that bigger law to protect themselves
against these
local ordinances.
Right. And now, the thing about it, it's very fishy the way they did it. They said as long as the houses are within 300 feet of each other, the municipality has the right to change zoning to disallow farming. Now, here's the thing. All that has to happen anywhere in the state is houses start getting built 300 feet next to each other.
Right.
And now right to farm has no teeth there.
Right. Right.
So it's not just urban farmers that this affects. It affects urban farmers most acutely and most directly and most immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But the long-term implications are that this has eviscerated the law for the state.
Yeah.
And people don't like to recognize or realize or acknowledge that Michigan is every bit as much an agricultural state as California is.
It is
a huge part of our economy.
Well, people don't even know how big the state is. They don't understand. It's one of the largest states.
Really, it is. And we can drive as far inside the state of Michigan.
12 hours or more.
As driving to the eastern seaboard, driving to the Atlantic Ocean.
It's an enormous state, and it has microclimates in it, and it has all different kinds of soil in it, and all different kinds of land, and it ought to be, if we didn't, if we respected it more, and valued it more, it would be just as much of sort of a regional food paradise as, say, Oregon.
Oregon,
is
or Northern California.
Yeah.
Or, all these places that have this regional food cachet.
Yeah, and so, and...
Or, for God's sake, even Maine, with all their lobster and blueberries, you know?
Right.
And potatoes.
Right. But yeah, I mean, we ought to be able to grow the best, lots of things.
The best blueberries, the best peaches, the best cherries.
We're already making some of the best Riesling wines in the world.
In the world.
Not to say they're all world-class, but there are some world-class wines among
them. From Michigan.
Really, really good.
That, you know, can really only come from here.
So I'm going to wind this up soon, but one of the things that happened is at the College of Worcester this past weekend, alumni weekend, there was a party and a program that was catered, and they had a guy in who was a master sommelier. And he was like a second tier master. Like, he hadn't achieved the ultimate mastery, but he, you know, there's a program, there's a class, there's a, you know, it's a lot to become one of the dozen master sommeliers in the world is like a multi-year process of training and, you know,
right.
But he was somewhere on that
track,
and I talked to him about this. Actually, he was interesting, but he was introducing some wines from Ohio.
Wow.
And some beers from Ohio.
That's amazing.
And I have to say, there was a Weiss, and I have to say it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as good as, like, some of our Michigan vices right off the tap. It was pretty good.
Pretty good.
And these were all tap. And then there was like a soup, there was a porter, and there was a Bock that was like 9% alcohol or something. I didn't actually drink that one because I didn't want a headache.
Yeah.
But Bock always gives me a headache. But there were a couple wines, and one of them was an Ohio Riesling. And you're like rolling your eyes, and I'm like, I didn't know that there were Rieslings grown in Ohio, and it wasn't bad. Now, I'm not saying it was really good, but I'm saying it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, I can taste that this is a Riesling, and it has some of those notes, and it's not awful. It's not great,
but, you know,
but
this
it
is
wasn't
not bad.
Mm-hmm. So this is Ohio's developing
a food cuisine, a food
with wine and beer.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's where it has to start. Honestly,
I think that's right.
I think
because those are the things that go with all the food.
All the food you're gonna eat. Exactly.
So,
yeah, and
but it's just so. And I came through the road to Worcester, that stretch of 51 East. It's all soybeans.
Yeah, a lot of Michigan is soybean and.
Yeah.
GMO beets
and the fact
sugar.
that wonderful land with all the that gets good rain and so has this, we've seen this elaborate runoff management system, like stormwater system with all these ditches and pipes and gullies and like even whole flood, I don't know what they call them, fields and culverts and everything to absorb flash floods, you know. That gets good water and it's good land. It's like glacial, you know. And
great soil.
Yeah, and to see that all given over to these giant fields of soybeans and with, like, you know, Pioneer Seed number so and so, like, you know, for that's just it's a little heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. It's criminal, but I'm not going to go there.
Because really, I was trying to think. I gave this talk in which we talked about how much everything's going to change and how much the loss of fossil fuel cheap. Trucking is going to destroy the food ecosystem, and the adaptation is going to be everyone has to have local food. Really focus on local food, and you know the College of Worcester, if they're going to survive, they're going to need to fill their dining hall with food grown within a few miles of the college.
All those flower beds, they're going to need to be brassicas.
Yeah,
honestly,
and so you know. I hope someone's looking at that. I want to talk to some of the faculty that I was chatting with because several of them, like Dan Bourne, my thesis advisor, he now has some kind of a special role as like a as an ecology guru, like he teaches some kind of class or something.
Oh, nice.
So I want to chat with him because talk about what we're doing here and what they're doing there, and see some informal conversation. Okay, you're taking the baby.
Oh no, last note here. Just one thing I want to touch on because I haven't got them in the ground yet, but I have.
There's a lot. I should say this is just the side yard.
Right.
There are a bunch of other beds.
Right. There's some. I've got a front perennial bed.
So when you come out here to play in the garden, you really have stuff to keep you occupied all day long.
Yes, I do. I've got here.
And the kids too.
The kids.
They can get involved.
I want to, and that's the reason I'm really trying to walk a fine line with Pippin. Because I want to keep him out here.
I was upset that he was running the sprayer continually and seemed to be like floating.
Washing out of bed. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he was helping.
He was helping.
Following instructions.
And he's gotten,
pretty carefully
he's gotten gradually better at doing exactly what you asked him.
Right.
Okay. I'm going to take a little road trip after this to calm myself down because I'm so wired. And
These
are blueberries. That's
like
what you're trying to tell me.
Yes. I have... six that are more traditional varieties that have they're different varieties, but they have different strengths, ability to overwinter, very cold hardy. They're all extremely cold hardy, down to zone 2, actually. We're in zone 6.
Wow.
So they should.
Yeah, they changed our zone.
Yeah, our zone's gone.
How
up.
Weird is that?
Yeah.
Our area code is.
So they should all really last a winter well, really weather over winter well.
Now, where are you going to put them?
These six are going on Blueberry Hill.
So Blueberry Hill is basically
a pile of dirt and a tree trunk.
We had some logs from this mulberry that got cut down.
Right. It's our first hoguiculture that we didn't know was hoguiculture project.
Well, we thought that it would have some value to stack them up and cover them with dirt.
Yes.
We wanted to make a little shelter and a hill for the kids to play on. Mm-hmm. But and you wanted to call it Blueberry Hill with the idea that you would actually plant blueberries
on
it.
Blueberry Hill, yes. So
okay.
We'll build in a slide, put a little structure on top, and blueberries all down the side of the hill.
So they can slide and eat blueberries.
Yes.
All day.
All day long.
Our kids are, I have to say, I'm really fair,
mm-hmm.
and so I don't take well to too much sun.
Mm-hmm.
But our kids are all turning, even the lighter ones are turning like gorgeous brown and none of them have burned.
Not at all.
Not at all. And that is, people might say tanning is unhealthy, but I think for a kid to get brown and bleach their hair in the summer if they don't get sunburned, I think it's a great thing.
One of the best things they can do.
Yeah.
But really, it's
lots of
vitamin D.
Yeah.
And that really, you don't really store it for the winter.
It helps them grow their bones.
Right, but it helps you sort of prepare for the winter.
Yeah.
This one is a cross between raspberry and blueberry.
No way.
Yes way. It's called Raz. I can't wait to taste it.
I didn't even know such a thing
was possible. Exactly. But they both belong to the rhododendron family.
Really?
How freaky is that?
So this is when I learn about the plants that we eat, their relationships to the, like, the nightshades and whatnot.
Right.
You know,
and all these plants we don't
they
eat.
They are bizarre.
Bizarre.
Like, but this is a thing in paleo. It's like, a lot of people apparently react badly to tomatoes and various other plants because they're nightshades.
Right. They're actually mildly toxic.
And so they're not, tomatoes aren't considered to be part of the paleo diet.
No, it's a...
But I've never had the slightest issue with any notable reaction to
well, and they it. Also, they you see how difficult they are to grow.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, I can't throw away food that's that easy to grow.
Right. No, I'm not asking us to. I would just would like, I really like to grow the heirloom tomatoes for slicing. Mm-hmm. And I really like the paste tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Because they actually, these bizarre variety of tomatoes, where if you pull one out of the, you know, off the plant and mm-hmm. slice it up and eat it, you're like, oh, this tastes really mealy and it's not very sweet.
Kind of nasty.
But then you cook it down and the tomato paste has this this vibrant, like pungent, delicious.
It tastes like sunshine.
It's delicious, absolutely delicious. And that's like an Amish paste and it was made to grow tomato paste, which is great because you can can it easily and store it forever. And
awesome
you add it to something, add it to anything, and it gives a lot of flavor.
Right.
All right.
This bed here is an herb and flower bed.
Yep.
So I've got thyme in this corner, lavender, oregano, chives, mint, feverfew.
I didn't know you were growing feverfew.
Yeah. So we've got a lot here.
You give me fever.
And the centerpiece of the bed, you can water it, please do. Water each petal thoroughly. The centerpiece of the bed that I'm going to put in this afternoon.
She said petal because the bed is actually a bunch of rocks shaped
like a
flower.
Yes, the flower-shaped flower bed.
Okay.
The centerpiece is a blueberry called Pink Lemonade. The berries are pink.
You're kidding.
I kid you not. So I'm very excited about that one too. So I got.
Oh, this is an experiment. We don't know if the blueberries will work out, but
we'll see the blueberries
we'll
go. But I got them from a local blueberry farm.
Really?
And talked to the farmer for about 2 hours.
I have never seen any of these in the store. Like
right, no,
pink,
they're not in the store, no.
Pink berry.
You see them in some catalogs sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're not in the store. I was talking to a blueberry farmer,
mm-hmm.
who's the guy with the blueberry and book barn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's kind of a freak. He's real. He's
we
real
really
freak.
Like our local freaks.
Yeah.
We wish we had more freaks.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Terrific guy. 2 hours, he gave me all kinds of fertilizer and peat moss to plant them with, and said, okay, and he actually said, listen, I told him my idea for Blueberry Hill, to plant these six together.
Really?
They will all complement each other. They all have strengths that interwork together.
And will they breed true, or are they all?
They'll breed. They will breed true. But the reason they complement each other is so, the ones that are winter hardy planted next to those that are less.
Yes.
They basically insulate and protect the others. The ones that are really productive and really attract pollinators attract pollinators to the ones that are less so.
Huh.
And so they are literally complementary to each other. And no, they won't tend to interbreed.
That's very cool. Okay, yeah. Well, we're not going to do all the flower beds and whatnot, but let's just say quickly, we have some nice tea roses coming in.
That make us wonderful rose hips.
We have some poppy flowers that survived.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the other ones didn't. But but you've got some other things you're planting in there. These are actually beds that are in the tree lawn.
Yeah.
So, so they're not dug in very much. They're kind of just on top.
They're on top. And actually, I used lasagna gardening for those beds.
Yeah.
I just put down a sheet of cardboard, dumped some compost on it, and then some wood chips.
Yeah.
And, actually, that first year, I just scattered cosmos to kind of break up the soil. And
we had a ton of cosmos. They really grew like crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, and they self-seed really well. The blueberry.
Are you expecting the cosmos to come back then?
Oh, cosmos always come back. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Even if you don't really give them any...
I wish Carl Sagan would come back.
I know.
Okay, anyway.
Yeah, Veronica, be sure you soak that blueberry in the middle. It's in a pot. Fill the pot with water.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Mm-hmm. So, the...
Blueberries like swampy land.
You were playing with that? Baby's awakened back in the grass, like every baby should be.
Yeah, when our kids come in and they're all...
Filthy
and
sweaty.
Exhausted, and they've actually covered with dirt from the garden, from playing in the garden all day. I feel like that was a good day for them.
Good day. It was a parenting success.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm going to actually take a little trip.
Take a little trip.
Thank you for talking with me. You are my favorite person in the whole world. And I love to talk to you. I wish I could talk more with fewer interruptions than we could. Because I want to learn about all this stuff. It is not my specialty. We complement each other in that way, you know. But but I'm really amazed and proud of all the things that we're doing here with your
That's why it's always effort. So, like, it feels so, what's the word, disheartening or defeat. I feel defeated when someone walks by our yard and judges it based on the height of the grass.
Oh, it's...
I'm like, seriously? Seriously. Yeah. You're looking at the goddamn grass.
And the grass...
Which I'm working to get rid of, honestly.
Okay, so real quick, we actually have planted a large part of the lawn we managed to kill, and then we put down seed of a short variety.
It's beautiful.
And it's beautiful, but the main thing is we don't have to mow it.
It's 4 inches
like,
tall
really,
and it's maturity.
And it's like, really? So that's like, if all our neighbors had put in that grass to begin with,
right, we'd never hear them.
We would not have a neighborhood full of internal combustion engines all day.
Of course, all day, two or three times a week.
Two or three times a week of people mowing, and that would be heavenly. But maybe it doesn't look as pretty to them as.
Or
but
something.
It's just a different variety of grass.
It's just a different variety of grass, and it's
But I'd like us to, if we could, I'd like to do the rest.
The rest, absolutely.
Of course, mostly I'd like to supplant the grass with other
things
that we can eat.
Yeah.
But whatever borders of grass we have left, I'd like to
have no mow.
Replace them with
with no mow. Yeah.
So I think we're going to try and kill our tree lawn at some point.
Yeah, that's actually my plan.
Put down cardboard until all those little fuckers are dead.
Oh, it's dead. Because we've got a couple of fruit trees out there, some apples that are, they should bear apples next year, those fruit trees. This is their second year in the ground.
That'd be fantastic.
The third year they should have apples on them.
Well, our little apple is already flowering.
Yeah, it's already flowering. It's got little apples on it. I'm very excited. But my goal actually for the tree lawn is to plant it with a succession planting of bulbs.
Yeah.
So we have cut flowers from the first of spring until the first frost.
And no one should be able to complain that we're growing flowers instead of grass.
Instead of grass. Right? And that's really my goal, is that it's something aesthetically pleasing and not grass. So it's like the compromise space.
So parts of it look like a mess still, but overall, it's really, if you look at it with an educated eye, it's really starting to look amazing.
Right, and it's getting there.
And this is only, you know, one full, like, growing season of work, plus part of a growing. But we do have help now. We have hired someone.
To come and chip in.
To come and help.
And make steady progress.
And to build these raised beds. Frank built the raised beds, and we paid him rather than do it all ourselves, because we're just overloaded with...
We're little people and workaday jobs and processing all the healthy produce.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But it's been a godsend for me to be able to earn enough that we could pay someone to help do this.
Help out.
Okay, speaking of, I'm gonna go take a little road
take
trip.
A break.
Take a break. And thank you for the chat. And I'm gonna turn this into a podcast episode.
So. Awesome.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.